Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan Wednesday declared a 3-month state of emergency. The latest move as a large-scale crackdown continues in the aftermath of Friday's failed military coup.
Darbe girişiminde bulunan terör örgütünün
in a televised broadcast, Mr. Erdogan, following a meeting with his cabinet, said the 3-month emergency will allow Turkish authorities to speedily and swiftly deal with all elements of the terrorist organization, a reference to those suspected of supporting exiled Muslim cleric Fethullah Gulen, whose extradition from the U.S. is being sought. Tens of thousands of soldiers, police, judges, civil servants, and academics have been suspended, fired, detained, or questioned since the failed coup. The country's currency and stock market have both fallen sharply. Standard & Poor's, the rating agency, Wednesday downgraded Turkey's foreign currency credit rating, citing its political fragmentation. Three French soldiers were killed earlier this week in a helicopter accident in Libya during an intelligence gathering mission. Colonel Ahmed Bouzaid El Mazmari, a spokesman for Libyan commander Khalifa Haftar, said the aircraft came down in the Maghroun area west of Benghazi as soldiers conducted what he described as a combat reconnaissance mission. He says an investigation is underway. The three Frenchmen are the first confirmed Western military casualties since it was revealed special forces have been operating in the North African country. Two groups that track the Ugandan rebel group Lord's Resistance Army says kidnappings by the group in Central African Republic and Democratic Republic of Congo have reached nearly 500 in the first half of this year. The groups, the Resolve and Invisible Children, said 17 others have been killed by the Renegade group. This is VOA News. Defense ministers from more than 30 countries are meeting near Washington, reviewing and agreeing to a strategy to defeat Islamic State. U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter said the IS group is being pushed back in its final strongholds of Syria and Iraq.
We now have momentum in this fight and clear results on the ground. And today, we made the plans and the commitments that will help us deliver ISIL the lasting defeat that it deserves.
Speaking at a separate meeting in Washington, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said the battlefield momentum against the IS group has shifted with a new challenge of securing and aiding for the recovery of liberated areas.
Much territory has been liberated faster than we imagine, but it is important to come in underneath the military liberation with the type of support for rebuilding, for health, for education, to be able to make sure that we're not leaving the door open for a disgruntlement or the revisiting of Daesh that undoes the liberation itself.
Kerry hosting a fundraising conference trying to raise at least $2 billion for Iraq. The third night of the Republican Party convention in Cleveland, Ohio, heard the acceptance speech of vice presidential candidate Indiana Governor Mike Pence, selected by presidential nominee Donald Trump and affirmed by delegates Tuesday. Trump's acceptance speech to be delivered Thursday night. Hundreds took to the streets of South Sudan's capital Juba Wednesday protesting an African Union plan to deploy a regional protection force to end factional fighting that threatens a shaky ceasefire. The AU force aimed at bolstering a 12,000-strong UN peacekeeping mission to keep the warring factions of President Salva Kiir and Vice President Riek Machar apart. President Obama, addressing the White House Summit on Global Development, pressed Wednesday for the next president to continue key global development initiatives in order to keep the momentum going following dramatic gains.
We're here to keep the momentum going, guided by the new Sustainable Development Goals, including our goal to end the outrage of extreme poverty. So I may only have 6 months left in office, but I'm here to say that whoever the next president is, development has to remain a fundamental pillar of American foreign policy and a key part of our work to lift up lives, not just overseas, but here in the United States.
Mr. Obama also signed into law the Global Food Security Act, promoting global food security, helping communities become more resilient to the impact of events such as drought and improving nutrition. After nearly a half-century break, Israel and mostly Muslim Guinea restored bilateral relations Wednesday, severed in the wake of the six-day Middle East War in 1967. It follows Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's recent four-nation African trip. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. At the Republican Party convention, the vice presidential nominee has formally accepted his nomination.
I am deeply humbled by your confidence, and on behalf of my family, here and gone, I accept your nomination to run and serve as Vice President of the United States of America.
As Mike Pence, the Republican Party vice presidential nominee, Zambia's government denies it is investigating some foreign embassies for helping print the banned Independent Post newspaper of Zambia. Ghana's Electoral Commission rejects accusations that it is biased, and scientists at the AIDS conference welcome a promising prevention study.
Basically, it is advised that a person who is at risk of developing HIV should take 2 pills before the intercourse and 2 pills within 24 to 48 hours after the intercourse. And the success rates for these studies are showing like 97%.
Rahul Landit is the marketing manager of Hetero Drugs. The Malayan army suffers heavy losses from Islamist militants' attack, and the Chancellor College of Malawi University has been closed. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The U.S. Republican Party National Convention continues in the Midwestern city of Cleveland. Yesterday saw several speakers take to the podium, among them Mike Pence, Donald Trump's vice presidential nominee, and Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, two men who were bitter primary rivals of Mr. Trump. Joining us from Cleveland is VOA's Vincent Mancuri. Good morning to you, Vincent.
Good morning, James.
We thank you very much for joining us again. Now, let's start with Mike Pence, Mr. Trump's vice presidential nominee. He spoke, and what did he have to say?
Well, he gave a rousing speech here in Cleveland. What he had to say mostly is to try to help people understand who Mr. Trump is, and he stated clearly that he believes Mr. Trump is the strongest person to lead this country come November because of the kind of character he has, the kind of values that he stands for. And he wanted to kind of explain him to those who may misunderstand him for being politically incorrect most times, because according to him, this moment needs a person like Mr. Trump, who does not mince his words and who is not necessarily a traditional politician, but an outsider with a great plan, just like a business plan for this country.
So what about Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio? These were two bitter primary rivals. And there was some uncertainty whether Mr. Cruz would endorse Mr. Trump or not. Did he or did he not?
Mr. Cruz did not endorse Mr. Trump. He came to the convention, gave a speech, and at the end of it asked Americans to vote their conscience. He did not endorse Mr. Trump, which became a source of disappointment to people. He was actually booed from the stage and escorted out, especially backstage. We're told that his wife and himself had to literally be escorted out as people continued booing them and calling them traitors.
Now, the event that dominated the first 3 days of the Republican Party convention was Melania Trump's speech and the allegations that she plagiarized Mrs. Obama's speech at the 2008 Democratic Convention. There was a new development on Wednesday. What is that?
Well, the new development is that there emerged a person from the Trump organization who actually said and confessed that she helped plagiarize that part of the speech for Melania Trump. And she wrote that, in fact, she had tendered her resignation to Mr. Trump because of that blunder. Meredith Melver, McCleaver, who is the person that claims to have written or helped Ms. Melania to write this speech, says, she made a big blunder. She apologized. She wanted to resign, but she was retained by Mr. Trump, who said, people make mistakes. So as it is, of course, this overshadowed the entire speech that Melania Trump gave. But then now we know the truth, and we know that somebody was responsible for this.
Now, Vincent, let's look ahead to today, Thursday. Thursday promises to be another big day. What can you tell us?
Big, big day, because this is the grand finale. Of course, we've been seeing Mr. Trump throughout the week coming in to check on his children and introduce some of them. But then today is the day that Mr. Trump gives his acceptance speech as the GOP nominee for the presidency of the United States. So this is the day that everybody has been looking forward to. And as he gives his speech this evening, of course, it will mark the beginning of the real campaign for presidency of the Republican Party and Mr. Trump himself.
Well, Vincent, we look forward to getting in touch with you again on Thursday, and we thank you very much for joining us on Daybreak Africa.
You're most welcome.
That was Vincent Mankori of VOA reporting, talking with us from the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Ohio. A new study shows daily intake of an antiretroviral pill can virtually eliminate the risk of getting HIV. The study is being held at the ongoing International AIDS Conference in South Africa. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Durban.
Scientists are optimistic about a study that showed great success in preventing the spread of HIV through regular use of antiretroviral drugs. Pre-exposure prophylaxis, or PrEP, is a key topic at this week's AIDS conference. According to a study unveiled at the conference, people who took a pill containing antiretroviral drugs each day, often the same pill that HIV-positive people take, showed extremely low rates of HIV transmission. 7 countries have approved the use of PrEP, and use of PrEP is increasing in the U.S. among high-risk groups. Hetero Drugs Limited is an Indian pharmaceutical company that specializes in generic drugs. Hetero International Marketing Manager Rahul Lande describes how PrEP works.
So basically it is advised that a person who is at risk of developing HIV should take 2 pills before the intercourse and 2 pills within 24 to 48 hours after the intercourse. So and the success rates for these studies are showing like 97% success. And those 3% are those who did not take pills basically. So it's quite a successful study.
A sex worker and activist from Australia, Cameron Cox, says neither he nor his partner use PrEP because both men are HIV positive. He says he is cautiously supportive of PrEP and that some of his male clients use the treatment.
And they tell me that when they have sex, say privately, non-commercial sex with other partners, that they feel much better about having sex. They're not all the time scared that this is maybe going to be the time where there's a slip-up or something happens and they seroconvert. So it's a wonderful thing for their mental health, if you know what I mean.
But he says he is worried that PrEP may lull people into a false sense of security. He says if the HIV rate falls among high-risk people, it may create a false belief that the epidemic is no longer a threat, and people may stop taking precautions against HIV. Indian sex worker Kiran Deshmukha, who is HIV positive, says she welcomes any advance in the fight against HIV. She proudly noted that none of her 3 children are HIV positive because she was able to take precautions to prevent transmission of the disease. She says she would not have a problem with her partner using PrEP. But her basic question would be, when she is using a condom 24/7, why would you need to use PrEP? That question, like many questions that swirl around the AIDS virus, is one that science alone cannot answer. Anita Powell, VOA News, Durban, South Africa.
Progress on the HIV vaccine is a hot topic at this year's Global AIDS Conference. A top AIDS expert says he cannot say when the cure for HIV/AIDS may be found, but he is happy about the progress. Tuso Kumalo reports for VOA from the conference in Durban, South Africa.
Scientists attending the 21st International AIDS Conference in Durban say there is still no vaccine in sight to prevent HIV and AIDS infections. U.S. National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases Director at the National Institute of Health, Anton Fauci, says it is impossible to predict when the HIV and AIDS vaccine will be found, but he is optimistic they are getting closer to a cure.
It is impossible to say exactly how far we are. The one thing we can say is that over the last several years, we have made important strides in the direction of getting a vaccine. But getting an HIV vaccine will probably be one of the most important and difficult scientific challenges in all of HIV research.
Although no specific vaccine has become the sole hope, scientists are vigorously pursuing tests and trials called HVTN-702. The vaccine being tested was developed from a trial that was done in Thailand several years ago and showed a modest degree of effectiveness. The trial of the vaccine is set to start in South Africa and other African countries later this year, but Dr. Fauci says it could be quite a while before the results are known.
It will take at least a couple of years to determine if that vaccine works. If it does, then hopefully we'll be closer to where we need to be.
The head of the Vaccine Research Center at the Chris Barakwanath Hospital in South Africa, Fatima Laha, says it is in the process of testing the ALVAC-GP120 vaccine.
The vaccine work that we do is to prevent HIV infection from happening in people who are negative. We're a few months away now from opening that trial that will show whether or not this vaccine will prevent people from getting HIV.
Most scientists say no matter how hard, work to find an HIV vaccine should be done now. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Durban.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Thursday, July 21st. Daybreak Africa time is 17 minutes past the hour. The Electoral Commission of Ghana is rejecting criticism that it is doing the bidding of the ruling National Democratic Congress Party by deleting the names of supporters of the main opposition New Patriotic Party from voter lists. Ghana will hold presidential election in November of this year. Following an order from the Supreme Court, the Electoral Commission this week began expunging the names from the voter list of those who register using their national health insurance identification cards. But Samuel Pine, the Ashanti Regional Secretary of the NPP, said the Electoral Commission deleted the names of party supporters who did not use their national health insurance identification cards.
I'm saying it is baseless. It has no basis in truth. It is not possible. It cannot be done because there is no way you can identify supporters of any political party on the electoral roll. You see, at the point of registration, there is a questionnaire. A number of questions are asked. Your name, your age, your residential address, your contact, the name of your parents. These are the basic information that we collect, after which we print an electoral roll. So it is not possible for any particular individual, just by taking a look at the electoral roll, to know which party an individual supports or belongs to.
The question then becomes, is the Electoral Commission engaging these political parties and other stakeholders in this voter registration process to ensure that all these criticisms are prevented ahead of the election proper?
There is always constant regular interaction between the Electoral Commission of Ghana and then the political party. To the extent that the regular meetings between the political parties and the Electoral Commission have been institutionalized. We call it the Inter-Party Advisory Committee, and they meet once every month. And at such meetings, issues of concern are brought to the fore for discussion. Consensus is built around a lot of issues before they are rolled out to the public.
One of the criticisms being leveled by other stakeholders and some political parties is that the Electoral Commission appears not to be doing enough public engagement to ensure Ghanaians repose confidence in its ability to administer free, fair, transparent and credible election. What is the Electoral Commission doing to address some of these concerns?
The Electoral Commission of Ghana is up to the scratch in its publicity and voter education drives. As we speak, we have developed jingles which are played regularly on most of the radio stations and FM stations. We have television promos and docudramas all over the TV stations. We have engaged with stakeholders at the local level. Our district offices are embarking upon intensive publicity drives across the length and breadth of this country, educating and mobilizing people to take part in these exercises. But we have also maintained over and over that getting these exercises right is a collective responsibility, that other stakeholders, including the political parties and then the media, are bound and must support and supplement the efforts of the Electoral Commission.
Samuel Pine is the Ashanti Regional Secretary of the opposition New Patriotic Party of Ghana. He was speaking with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Accra. Suspected Islamist militants attacked an army base in central Mali on Tuesday this week, killing 17 soldiers. It is the worst loss suffered by Malian forces since January 2012, when Al-Qaeda infiltrated groups Al-Qaeda-affiliated groups capture a military base in the country's north. Katerina Hoyer reports from the Malian capital, Bamako.
The army says 70 soldiers were killed when suspected Islamist militants attacked a remote army base in the central Malian town of Nampala. Another 35 soldiers were wounded as assailants burned buildings, pillaged shops and shot at troop positions at the base just a few kilometers south of the Mauritanian border. The attack followed increasing unrest in Mali's central Mopti and Segu regions that includes not only attacks on security forces but also clashes between self-defense militias and armed groups over territory on land. The situation has degenerated since 2015, mainly due to the fact that the state is absent in some parts of the region, says Bukari Sangare, a researcher who has monitored the conflict in the center for the past decade.
Comment les gens font maintenant pour résoudre les problèmes? Puisque c'est une zone infestée par le conflit.
The zone has emerged in intercommunal conflicts between Pearl and Ogun, Pearl and Tuareg, and so on. It's total chaos. This has pushed some Pearl groups to take up arms to defend themselves against other groups, after all traditional conflict solving mechanisms have broken down, says Sangare. Mali urgently needs help to address the escalating conflict in the center. But with the United Nations peacekeeping mission already overstretched in the north and French forces in Operation Barkhane engaging with terrorist groups in the northern regions, resources are limited.
No, pour nous, ce n'est pas la nouvelle frontière. Ça, c'est peut-être ce que certains pensent.
Mopti is not a new front, but we are facing a threat in this region from terrorist groups that have not signed a peace agreement that we have not seen before. The biggest security threat, however, is still northern Mali. What we have seen in the center is only the echo of the conflict in the north, says Army Chief of Staff Colonel Major Abraham Babi. On Tuesday, two armed groups claimed responsibility for the attack in Nampala. A radio station received a call from the National Alliance for the Safeguarding of the Pearl Identity and the Restoration of Justice, an ethnic Pearl self-defense militia. It would be the first time the group, which was set up last month and includes some who fought alongside the Islamists, has launched an attack. Hours later, the Messina Liberation Front also said it was behind the attack. Last year, the group affiliated with Islamist extremist group Ansadin killed over a dozen people in an attack on a hotel in Sevare. Colonel Major Babi said it was more likely that the Messina Front was behind the attack.
Bien sûr. C'est-à-dire c'est les échos parce que c'est ce qui se passe au nord qui trouve sa résonance dans
le. We know that some of the movements in the center, such as the Messina Front, are affiliated with Ansadin in the north. The group's leader Yad Agageli is linked to other terrorist groups, such as HUA and others. That's why I'm saying that the north is the origin of the violence in the center, he says. The Nampala attack is the worst loss suffered by Malian forces in such an attack since the January 2012. When fighters from Ansadin and Al-Qaeda-linked groups captured a military base in Agalhok in northern Mali. Katerina Hoye for VOA News, Bamako.
The office of Zambian President Edgar Lungu is denying that it ordered the country's intelligence services to infiltrate and investigate certain foreign diplomats whom the ruling Patriotic Front Party believes are helping print the Post newspaper of Zambia. A report in the Post, citing intelligence sources, said the embassies being targeted include the United States, Britain, and Germany. The government closed the Post last month for not paying about $6.1 million in questionable back taxes. Some say the paper was targeted because it had been critical of President Lungu. The U.S. Embassy had criticized the Post closure. Amos Chanda, spokesman for President Lungu, described the allegations as fabrications. He says Zambia respects the international conventions covering diplomatic practices.
Neither the president nor myself have spoken to the intelligence services to investigate diplomats. Zambia is a civilized state. It does not interfere the operations of diplomats. I can tell you one thing. The American ambassador, His Excellency Mr. Eric Schulz, has met with the president privately over the post. The president asked Ambassador Eric Schulz to help raise $5 million, the amount of money they are owing in taxes, about $5 million. The president has said to Ambassador Eric Schulz, if you help them, they will be open tomorrow. Embassies are protected premises. We respect the territorial integrity of every nation. We respect the international conventions covering diplomatic practice.
U.S. Embassy in Zambia, Lusaka, has been critical of your government's decision to close down the Post newspaper. So you are saying you're not accusing the U.S. Embassy?
If we suspected the American ambassador, we have a fantastic relationship with him as an individual. And also we have a fantastic relationship with the U.S. government. I have told you, Western diplomats and African diplomats, they met with the president. 1 week after meeting all the diplomats accredited to Zambia, Ambassador Eric Schulz had a private conversation with the president, very fruitful. I was in that meeting. There was no suspicion between the two groups. What the president said, that since the U.S. embassy felt so strongly about the post, he pledged to him that the post will not remain in the kind of difficulties they were facing 1 minute longer if they paid that money.
People say that the decision to close down the post because the post did not pay taxes, they say that's a bogus charge because the post had been critical of your government.
Being critical of the government does not exempt you from paying taxes. If that is the case, all of us will be critical of government so that we don't pay taxes. The VOA, the Fox News, the Washington Times, the Washington Post, the New York Times, they are all critical of the Obama administration. Are they exempted from paying tax? Is that a qualification not to pay tax, to be critical of the sitting government?
The article alleges that you are also going after newspaper vendors in the country.
Last week, I bought the Post on the streets of Lusaka myself. I bought from a vendor myself. But I can tell you this. The Zambia Revenue Authority has taken over the operations of the Post. So anyone who prints the Post away from the knowledge of the Zambia Revenue Authority is doing so illegally. The Supreme Court of the Republic of Zambia has pronounced on that matter. It has ruled that the Post newspapers owe money and they ought to pay.
Amos Chanda is spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of African news. U.S. President Barack Obama is pressing for the next president to continue key global development initiatives in order to keep the momentum going following dramatic gains. Mr. Obama spoke Wednesday during the White House Summit on Global Development in Washington. Shortly after speaking, the White House announced the president signed into law the Bipartisan Global Food Security Act. The law directs authorities to promote global food security, help communities become more resilient to the impact of events such as drought, and to improve nutrition. It codifies much of a signature Obama initiative known as Feed the Future. The Republican-led Congress also adopted the Electrify Africa Act, which is linked to Obama's signature Power Africa initiative. And that's it for this Thursday, July 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Zubair El Tayeb, I'm James Button, Washington, saying have a good day, Africa.
Next time on Street Talk Africa, Shaka Sali and his guests will discuss the Democratic National Convention and what a Hillary Clinton presidency could mean for Africa. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa. Next on Let's Talk, Men in Relationships. What should they do to keep them going and flourish? Join hosts Sande Shomari and his guests discussing men in relationships. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.